The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
What's up? Welcome to Cherry's World Podcast. I am Cherry Johnson. Today, I have a treat for you. How many Black men do you know that are patent owners? Well, I got one in the house. His name is Mr. Jason Swanson. Not only is he a patent owner, but he is also a chief meta officer. I don't know what that is, and you probably don't either unless you front. But if you stay tuned, we're going to find out.
The only podcast coming through your beat stereo is Cherry's World, so let's go around like a merry-go. Plug your phone in, make sure I got a full battery. Download it Wednesday, listen to it Saturday. She cover all topics, whatever you after. She got ball players, authors, doctors, actors, rappers, singers, entrepreneurs, divas, leaders, Androids or Apple, turn up your speakers. Trying to shoot my shot like the vaccine, whether it's Cherry or Maxine, whether the podcast or acting, she that queen. PYT, you know what that mean. Saw you on TV and touched the screen. Touch on you, I plead Lucy's got a crush on you. It'll mean the world to get a blush from you. Teaspoon to me, leave you sleep like Robitussin do.
Hey, Joe.
Hey, how you doing, beautiful?
I'm amazing. How are you, baby?
I'm doing great. Tell your mother I said thank you for having you.
Oh, my mother loves you. My mother has actually been asking me, how are you? Where's the baby and what's going on in your world?
Mm-hmm. Baby's doing good. Everybody's good, happy, healthy. Tell mommy I love her and I'm happy that she had you and happy that she got you in the business. And, you know, you just are just a breath of fresh air. So I'm always pleased to be in your ecosystem, love.
Oh, thank you, sweetheart. For those of you who don't know, this man right here has been part of my village for many, many years, and he's been very instrumental in my life, but he's also my sensei when it comes to this whole tech world. Can we talk about just simply you being a Black man in tech?
Yeah, we can. Yes, I've been in the tech space since 81. Which was the first time my mother sat me on her lap when she worked at a data processing center in New York. Her mentor was the mentor of Bill Gates. His name was Bill Galinsky. And that's really where I started my whole love and infatuation with all things software development, coding at 6 years old. So by the time I got to college, I was 13 years old. I entered college at 13 at NYU's first STEM program. And it was very out of the ordinary because, you know, the Black kids from Harlem, especially Black boys, aren't entering college at 13 years old, let alone a STEM program for science and technology. So I was the only Black there, and it's nothing but white kids and Asian kids. And it was a culture shock, but I loved it because I was groomed by my family to get ready and be part of that whole, you know, explosion of tech. And of course, me being of color, specifically Black American, we weren't represented in that particular space, so it was quite groundbreaking, and of course that really sparked me to get into tech even far deeper. So 4 years later, I would be in Columbia University, and I would be taking a train from Columbia. Columbia University, people don't know, is in Harlem, on 116th Street and Broadway. So I'd be taking a train back uptown to my house, and I ran into my mentor, who his name is Hay Stamper. He's working for a software company called AMS. And he physically introduced me to what is now called the metaverse. But back then it was called virtual reality. And he basically gave me an internship. He was a systems integrator. What they did, in short, they basically produced and distributed the actual hardware, the computers that created the animations for your Grand Theft Auto video games now, and your ILM, Industrial Light and Magic, the studios that make Hollywood animations for Marvel. So this company that I had an internship with, they basically had all of the major computer systems that generated animations. This, we're talking about 1993, and this is just to give you kind of like a soundtrack to my life. This is when Dr. Dre dropped the Chronic. So I'm eating Cheez-Its, drinking Coca-Cola, learning how to write code and animate the Statue of Liberty rotating left and right, back and forth, and up and down in circle of motion. And that's really what sparked my impetus to get into game development, video game development. And that's from that point on, I'm 17, 18, and I developed about 9 video games in a hood. And that's where it was at.
Mm-hmm. So we're talking about your tech knowledge. Mm-hmm. I met Jay because Jay used to work at my agent's office.
A non-exclusive talent manager in the space. Stanley was the agent. He was the licensed agent. And he was my mentor. He taught me how to be a talent manager in Hollywood. So what I basically did was I had a small boutique group of talents that I was trying to get major speaking roles in Hollywood films. And I used Stanley, who literally was a veteran in the game, Jewish man, he taught me all of what I needed to know about the nuances and the dynamics of booking talent. So he partnered with me and I partnered with him because I already had an existing plethora of people and just friends. And I helped him structure his business because he has so many talents. He was like, he had like 5,000 talents, literally, from all walks of life. I helped him basically get all of his, his commissions. Because a lot of people don't know that back in those days, you know, it's not like you had social media. You had to rely on the talent to pay you your commission. We're talking about 2003, 2004. So Stanley would get the breakdown of the movie or the TV show, the commercial, and me as the agent would basically try to fill that order, right? Of that the talent to be to do the speaking role, audition for the speaking role, or, you know, be the extra. And then when they booked, Stanley and I would basically collect the commission. But so what I did was I had actors physically write the address on their form, on the slip when they were finished with their scene. I had them put Stanley's address on the card, and the checks from production would come to his office. So now the talent would have to come to the office to pick up their money, and we got our commission, and they didn't run off. So we were partners in that particular regard. Really, seriously, that changed the whole scope in New York and of, you know, talent paying our commission.
They used to run off and not pay you?
Well, not me per se. It was Stanley, and so because I was a talent manager, so I was very hands on with talent, especially
due to the fact that too. I don't think too many people are gonna be running off and not paying you.
No. I'm from Harlem, and we love money, and you're just not gonna do that. And it was a different type of. It was a general consensus of, you know, who to deal with and who not to deal with in terms of running off with someone's commission. So when I realized that Stanley wasn't getting his commission, I said, Stanley, this is what I'm gonna do. And I told him the process. He said, okay, no problem, try it. Next thing you know, it worked.
It works, and that's what everybody's doing now.
Yep. Excuse me, allergies. I got nerdy problems.
Well, I just coughed with you. So tech and entertainment has been your thing. Since I've known you, but it seems like your whole life. Let's talk about this whole meta world, because I had a conversation with you and you broke it down to me, but I know there's other people out there who are my age who do not understand what's going on in technology. Can you explain to us exactly what this whole metaverse thing is?
Sure. So it's fairly simple. So the metaverse technically in layman's is a virtual environment of various different video games, if you will, that are talking to each other, that allows human beings in the real world be represented by a game character. In this case, it would be called an avatar. So you would create your own avatar in a virtual environment, which is called a metaverse, like Facebook's Meta or Sandbox or Decentraland. And your avatar basically has the ability to walk throughout this virtual world like a video game and interact with other avatars that are controlled by people in the real world. And how you onboard or subscribe to a metaverse, you either download the app, a metaverse app, or you log onto their website. And like a video game, as opposed to you going through different levels, you basically socialize with people, you buy things. And when I say things, I'm talking about digital assets, like, you know, virtual clothing, so you can dress your avatar. Just like anything you do in the real world, the metaverse is a digital version of real world scenarios, right? And what people don't understand about the metaverse is that it's an extension of what people do in the real world. It's just being done in a virtual fashion. And so there's really no disconnect when you truly understand it. However, the future of how we interact with one another is, because of things like the pandemic, is going to be repurposed to a virtual environment. And so that's why you have this explosion of a metaverse or virtual environment conversation, cryptocurrency, which is your digital money now being used to purchase things online, as well as in these virtual environments, as well as in the real world. And so with the metaverse, it's in this what is called Web3 space, right? Mm-hmm. Where everybody who understands Web3 is interacting with one another. So you have an app, you have a website. Well, in 5 years or 10 years from now, you're going to have a virtual version or virtual environment that represents your business. Let's say you have a brick and mortar. Let's say you have a barbershop, you have a laundromat, you have a restaurant. There's going to be the metaverse will allow you to have your own virtual version of your real world or your brick and mortar in this particular environment. So now people who've never been to, you know, Ms. Johnson's, you know, bookstore, let's just say, with a beautiful shelf in the back, can now go in and visit it in the metaverse and meet your avatar that looks like you. They're called, we call them metahumans, which is our hyper-realistic avatars. And you can meet the proprietor, you can meet the manager, and you can talk to that person in this particular virtual environment, buy the book. You can buy the book, you know, in the metaverse, and then you, as the proprietor, as the actual owner in the real world, sets up the what is called gateway or the way to purchase that particular book. Question: Yes.
Okay. So when they buy the book, would it be a digital version?
Right. So that's a great question. So it can be both. It can be the ebook, right, that your avatar can obtain, and you can take your avatar can take that digital book, that ebook, back to his or her virtual mansion or virtual condo, right, in virtual New York City, if you want to live in a high rise, or you can set it up like you order a book on Amazon. Your avatar can buy the book in the metaverse at your virtual store, and your salespeople can sell it, and your staff can physically send that book in the real world once they get the order from the metaverse, like a website, mm-hmm. and send the actual physical copy to that person in the real world.
Amazing.
That's okay, where we're going.
Now, you are a chief meta officer.
Metaverse officer, uh-huh.
What does that mean?
Right. So that's another great question. So chief metaverse officer, I'm the chief metaverse officer of my meta world. And my meta world is like the GoDaddy of the metaverse. And what we basically do is we develop virtual environments for various different industries, for people in the hospitality industry, people in the medical industry. So what a chief metaverse officer does is he or she is the actual go-to person to explain to the investment community or clients in any industry how they can basically repurpose their real world business in the metaverse and how it would work. So we explain from inception, from the idea standpoint, all the way to the build out, and of course to the launch phase of releasing that your virtual bookstore to the world, how to market it, how to obtain, how to monetize your virtual environment. So the chief metaverse officer explains all that to clients, and he or she makes it make sense in layman's so that you can basically make money. That's what I do. Aside from other things.
As a chief. If somebody wanted to like reach out to your company, right, to get them to build their own little, I don't know, parcel in the meta world, how much money would they even need?
That's a great question. So keep in mind that you're not, when you're building a virtual environment or you're building a metaverse project, right? You're not building a website, right? Which might cost you $1,500 or $1,500 or if it's a real kick-ass website, you know, $4,000. You're not building an app, which might cost you $1,500 or maybe $250,000. You're building a environment, right? That involves what is called gamification. So gamification is, people think, oh, it's like a video game. Yes, but it's more simpler than that. So it takes more engineers to build your virtual environment, to set up the ability for people to buy stuff, or for people to not only purchase your digital assets, or purchase your services, but more importantly, for people to also engage with your avatar. It takes different types of engineers to do that. Game developing engineers, like people who work on like Grand Theft Auto. I worked on the first Grand Theft Auto back in 98, right? Or, you know, so that's the type of engineer you would basically be hiring to create your own metaverse project, right? And then there's, of course, then there's people that deal with your copy, meaning that your wording is right. And then there's the engineers to basically create your e-commerce mechanism, the ability for someone to pay for your book in the back with cryptocurrency, whether it's using Bitcoin or Ethereum, which is the digital currency that a lot of humans use to purchase virtual assets or digital assets on the blockchain in these metaverses. So to your question, how much would something like that cost? It really depends on the complexity of the project, and I'll be brief and short about it. If you're building a barbershop on 125th Street, I'm from Harlem, so that's my go-to, right? So if you're building a barbershop, you know, on 125th Street, like levels, right, between St. Nick and Amsterdam, and Score Street from the project, let's just say, and you want me just to build that barbershop, and you want me to gamify, meaning you want me to allow your users to order or to book an appointment, right? That's where the gamification comes in. Or you want to throw a sweepstakes and say, oh, we're giving out, you know, a free flash screen, you know, sign up here and pay in Bitcoin. So that to do a demo, just a demo without gamification, right? Just so that you can see it, that would start you at 50K, okay? And that's engineers, right? That's, you're getting game developing engineers. You're not getting software developers that just do websites, you know, or app developers that just do apps. And keep in mind, software itself, coding itself, you start to get into the conversation of different types of codes that create different types of platforms, whether it's you're developing Netflix, that's a different type of language, as opposed to developing a barbershop in the metaverse. That's a game development language, right? So it's different from JavaScript, right, which is your Netflix and your websites, to Objective-C, which is your coding language for the app. So that's 50K so that's 50K for your sample, right? And your demo, excuse me. And then if you want us to gamify it, right? Meaning you want all these bells and whistles, you want the avatars to be built to look like you, you want AI built in, artificial intelligence, so you can automate certain things. You want AI, you want multiple different things. That will start you at 250K, okay, and up.
This isn't something that you go into when you ain't got no money. This is when you got some money to invest in yourself.
Right.
And then besides from being able to make appointments or to sell books, how are people making a lot of money in this whole meta world?
Right, so people are making money from various different revenue streams. People are making money by selling digital assets in the form of NFTs, which stands for non-fungible tokens. So an NFT technically is a computer code that can't be duplicated. That's why it's called non-fungible. Fungible tokens are Bitcoin. Bitcoin can be duplicated, right? That's why there's 23 million Bitcoins out there to be obtained, right? So, and those are called fungible tokens. So NFTs are non-fungible tokens in which people basically use to sell products in the real world, products or assets in the real world. You have a house, you have a mansion in Calabasas, right? Well, you know what? I want to sell my mansion in the metaverse, and I want to charge you using, I want to charge you a specific amount, but I only want to accept Bitcoin. So people are making money selling assets in the metaverse using Bitcoin, and in a form of NFTs. And that particular transaction is stored on the blockchain, which is technically considered a digital ledger, right? I don't know if you know what blockchain really means, but that's what it is. It's a digital ledger that keeps track of every transaction between human beings on this particular platform, this software. And the smart contract, which is basically what it is, it's a smart contract, right, between you and I, stating that I purchased your mansion in Calabasas in the metaverse or in the real world, and it can't be broken. And it can't be duplicated. I paid you in crypto, whether it's in Bitcoin, Ethereum, Dogecoin, you know, or a stablecoin, which is a different type of cryptocurrency. Stablecoin is a coin, is a digital currency that's backed by like commodity, like gold or silver or platinum. That's a stablecoin, which is different from a Bitcoin. Bitcoin is not a stablecoin; it's volatile, meaning it goes up and down. You don't know; it's not backed by anything. And so we agreed, I'll buy your mansion using Bitcoin, because it's trading at $24,000 right now, USD, and you know that you can, you know that that Bitcoin is worth something. So people are making money from selling digital assets, digital clothing. They're making money through gamification in the metaverse. They're making money building virtual environments and charging people to live virtually in these particular metaverses and gaming. So there are metaverses that are games like Sandbox, Decentraland, Upland, where people are making money by buying a block of Harlem, let's just say, in this particular metaverse. They bought a whole block on this map, kind of like when you look at Google Maps, you see the various different blocks, right, that are illustrated. And in this metaverse, which is a game, you can buy this actual parcel of land, which looks like a city block, and then you can resell it to somebody else who comes in, because when more people join this particular metaverse, the actual value of that particular virtual property goes up. So that's how people make money.
Meta real estate is crazy. Do you remember what I called you? So I called Jason like a year ago, right? Because I was interested in buying some meta real estate. And I had asked somebody to price it for me. And they were like $250,000. I said, wait, $250,000 real money? Like, yeah. I wanted something on the internet. And they were like, yeah, that's what it's
right.
Jason, this is like buying a real property.
Right.
So I could literally play the real estate game in the metaverse, just like I've played in real life.
Correct. Right.
If you were going to invest right now in real estate, would you do it virtually or would you do it in real life?
Right. That's a great question. So I would do both. New business models that are emerging because of the metaverse, like Nas invested in this Asian girl in Atlanta. She's buying real estate in different metaverses. Keep in mind, there are different metaverses that are out there. There are metaverses where you could just socialize and meet people and go to clubs. And there's metaverses where you could just buy land in hopes that land in the virtual world will increase in its worth. But there's also metaverses where it's just established as a video game where you can basically make money by, you know, killing zombies and, you know, which is what Roblox is. Roblox is is the biggest metaverse. It has 230 million active users daily.
Your niece daily.
She's correct. And right. And a lot of young people in the metaverse in terms of Roblox are literally making money because they're building real estate in the metaverse and they're selling. So to your question, I would purchase real estate in different metaverses that are within your budget, of course, like Upland. You know, if Upland releases the Bronx which they released the Bronx in Brooklyn. So I bought parcels of blocks in Brooklyn because, you know, I can relate. And then people started onboarding the this particular metaverse, and the value of that block started to go up. So I bought it for like $400, right? $400 USD, which equated to something, which equated to, you know, hundreds of thousands of UPIX, which is their version, their cryptocurrency, because they have their own cryptocurrency for their metaverse. And then when more people started to onboard that metaverse, the value of that city block in the Bronx, I mean, Brooklyn, went up for me. So I was able to sell it off. So to your question, I would purchase also real estate in the real world that's attached to the metaverse. So there are metaverses that, are doing deals with actual real estate owners of actual commercial and residential properties in the real world. Because now commercial and residential property owners are becoming hip, and they're saying, well, whatever metaverse is popular, especially the ones that aren't like video game esque, like, you know, Roblox or Upland, the ones like Second Life. Second Life is a metaverse that's mirrors Earth, if you will. So you can purchase parcels of land in that particular metaverse. We're talking about Second Life. You can go Google it. They're owned by Linden Labs in San Francisco. You can actually buy parcels of land. So real estate owners of residential commercial properties, they're attaching their actual real estate holdings in the real world to metaverses so that they don't get, you know, left in the dark. And so what we're doing with my MetaWorld, we have our metaverse called Earthia, in which we're developing these various different business models in terms of making deals with real estate owners who own commercial and residential property, as well as creating various different opportunities for new entrepreneurs, right, that see this as a value proposition to their existing business model, or new entrepreneurs that see this as a way for them to make money because they don't have $250,000, but you know what? They may have $400, may have $1,000 to buy this small parcel of land that's next door to you because you're a celebrity, you're a Punky Brewster, you're Family Matters. Oh my God. So that value, I know that if I buy my parcel of land, virtual land, next to your apartment building that you own, right, in Baldwin Hills, let's just say, you know what? I know I'm going to make some money as a new entrepreneur because you are going to bring all your celebrity friends and they're going to have an apartment, or they're going to have a condo, or they're going to have a mansion, and I can sell it to Jason, who wants this land from me because it's next to Miss Johnson and her friends in that community. Right. So those are the business models.
It's crazy, but it makes so much sense. I'm so thankful that I have you in my village, and love you. Seriously, I can reach out to you anytime. I love you too. I am going to put your links down below so that other people could reach out to you as well. What is the easiest way for them to get to you to have a conversation, maybe to understand a little bit more in depth?
Sure, I'm accessible. So I'm on Instagram as jason.a.swanston, S-W-A-N-S-T-O-N. So you can instant message me. And whether I'm in America or I'm in Asia, I still answer. I'm on Facebook, of course, and or you can just hit me up directly, or, you know, jasonswanston@gmail.com, or that's the Gmail, because a lot of people have Gmail, or hit me up at js@earphia.io. That's earphia.io. And I'll answer. But the best way, if you want to get me right away, is hit me on IG and or TikTok, and I'll answer.
Sure that I put that below. Okay, so sure. Talk about whether I'm here or whether I'm in Asia. Like, I love you guys don't understand, like, we go way back. So
way back. Yeah.
So to hear him be like this grown man who is, what are you? I can't call you tri-coastal. You're
bicontinental.
Bicontinental.
Right.
You get which continent you want to live in and when?
Yeah. So yeah, because of me being in the tech space, Asia is really inviting to Black tech.
The future is a hefty responsibility, and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Engineers like myself, because we talk the language, and in India, specifically where I live, they have they have things called IT parks, and these IT parks are kind of like Silicon Valleys, and you're in the tech space like myself, you look for talent in that particular arena, and so you go to India, or if you can stomach China, not being derogatory, but if you can stomach China and their culture. You go to China and Shenzhen, and you dip your toe into that particular ecosystem, and you meet friends, and next thing you know, you're hiring that talent pool. And the interesting thing about Indians, East Indians to be specific, with their disposition towards African Americans, is especially in North America, is when you get to their particular continent. It's very different. I didn't really witness the racism, or I wouldn't call it racism, I call it bigotry, that I did when I was in America from that particular ethnic group. When they found out that I was in the tech space, it was a different type of look, and they basically were astonished. And of course, culturally, it may seem derogatory, where they say, "Oh, well, you're really smart. How are you smart?" Because their condition, wow. From Western media, that all African American males, straight males, not gay, straight. I have to be very descriptive, right? are thugs and criminals, And so when you meet an intellect like myself, who's not gay, who's straight, I'm making this point because there aren't that many of us in that particular space in Asia that get accepted. When I say get accepted, meaning invited to their table. And you have to be invited to their table because you're in their part of the world, right? And so I basically break those barriers, and I kind of express to them, hey, listen, this is not, this is not Power, the TV series. I'm not from that particular ilk, and I'm explaining to them, your blue is not my blue. Your hue of blue, of understanding, is not, and that's why I express to a lot of people who hire Indians as software developers to build their websites on Fiverr and even GoDaddy. It's like, you got to explain to them, your blue is your blue because you come from a different understanding of what blue is, because you have festivals in India, right? But my blue, because I'm from North Carolina, is a North Carolina blue, right? Right. So I try to tell people who hire Asian engineers to really explain to them what your blue should look like when they're building an app for you, or where they're building a front end, website, how your website is going to look, the color scheme and everything. So, but it was, living in India is cool. It's I've broken a lot of barriers. I look at myself as a champion for my community, my Black American community. I look at myself as a champion for Black people throughout the African diaspora when talking to Asians in the tech space, because they just don't look at us as intelligent or mathematicians or scientists. When when history has shown that we are patent holders. We've invented a lot of things that have changed the way. Look at Lewis Latimer. He literally pioneered the filament that keeps lights on and keeps light burning in your light bulb. You know, look at Dr. Garrett Morgan, who invented the traffic light as well as the gas mask that helped American soldiers fight the Nazis. You know, we invented, these are Black people. Look at Gladys West, who pioneered and invented the GPS mathematics for location software. So, you know, there's so many women, women who invented VoIP, voice over internet protocol. So the reason why you and I are able to talk right now is because of a Black woman. She's alive today, and she holds... She holds over 80 patents in voice over internet protocol. The ability for me to talk to you through the internet, okay, was invented and pioneered by a Black woman. And I'm not going to tell you her name. Go look her up.
No, I love the fact that you're talking
about... Not you, but the audience.
No. But I just, like, we go from what you say something and I'm like, ooh, 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 because there's so much that I want people to know about you. You talked about patents. You're a patent owner yourself, sir.
Yes. Yes, thank you very much. I'm very excited. It was a trying journey. I will tell everyone, you just can't become a patent owner in technology, because I'm a patent holder in technology. You know, it's like going in front of the board, you know, whether it's, going in front of the board to get off parole, get out of jail for a quick, correlation, or not to say I've been in jail, but a lot of my family members have been, but it's kind of like that, it's like, are you going to be free? When you submit your, it's called an abstract or the description of your patent to the United States Patent and Trademark Office, the USPTO. And so, 7 to 9 other engineers, which are patent examiners, are going to vet and look at your abstract and look at your diagrams to see whether or not, you're impeding or infringing on Apple or Microsoft or Netflix's patents or whatever they file, because you don't know. You do a patent search with your attorney, see if anyone else has it. Okay, they may not have it. Then you have to submit in hopes that it passes the smell test, because you could get rejected. And that's after you spend all this money, hundreds of thousands of dollars, because you can be rejected. That's what happens. But what I try to tell, especially young Black creators who want to get into tech and develop ideas, don't tell anyone. When you get an attorney, especially get a law firm that doesn't see you as a Black person, but sees you as an inventor. And that was the trouble I had when I started my journey with my platform, Ovnio, was I went through so many law firms that literally, because of my idea being a streaming platform that can debacle the cable industry, and basically control, have content providers like yourself control your narrative. I had law firms that basically wanted me to sell the actual source code, the actual code, not even a patent, just the code first, right? Because a lot of law firms in America, they are white owned, that deal with patents. And I'm talking about the law firms that I've encountered in the beginning of my journey back in 2006. And their whole impetus is for you to sell it, right? Sell your stuff, just like, rappers, like, go get a deal. Don't be independent. So technology is like, sell it. I had a law firm in Boston tell me you'll be in a Bentley tomorrow. And nobody's going to believe a Black man created a software that can basically compete with Time Warner Cable, Spectrum, Comcast, and Cablevision. And this was back in 2008. And then I had to tell that partner, hey, come downstairs with me. And this is after I engaged him, I gave him his money. And we're walking past a vehicle. And I told him, I said, listen, this is the end of our business relationship. I hope that, and this guy was a partner of the firm, and he was Black. He was a Black partner. He was a junior, but he was still a partner. And I was very taken aback, because he had somebody who wanted to buy my software. And I said, listen, I hope that you never, ever see the light of day, because your ideology, the way you think, is detrimental to any Black kid coming from Harlem or any other inner city that has great tech and a great idea. And then I opened my door and I hopped into my Rolls Royce Phantom. And he didn't know I had one. But this is the same guy. That said that sell it and you'll be in a Bentley tomorrow, not knowing I had that at that time. So... and of course he looks catatonic. He was like, wait, but this is yours? there's nothing to discuss. You know, I'm disengaging. So all that to say is that, you know, it's very hard. It was very hard to get a patent and to get find a law firm that would that basically would take it on. And then I found a law firm out of Seattle, you know, Asian law firm, and they understood it. And so my patent basically covers the ability for you to watch television and do multiple things. And I could talk about that because a patent is a public document, right? And you can not only watch a TV show, but you can purchase merchandise directly from the stream, as well as order food, socialize at the same time while you enter the metaverse or use cryptocurrency to purchase something, all in one particular web window through an actual streaming app or a desktop and laptop version of the actual platform itself. So that's what my patent covers. And I don't want to go into detail because I have other proprietary stuff behind it, but it allows content creators, filmmakers, distribution companies to scale exponentially because you can geo stream. I mean, you could watch the American Gangster at the same time. I'm in India, you're in California, and it'll cut to commercial. I'll get the commercial that's targeted to me as a Black man, and you'll get the commercial that's targeted to you at the same time. And then we'll be able to click the buy now button, which is part of my patent, to purchase that service or that product directly from that commercial, that advertiser, as well as when it cuts back to the scene of American Gangster, which is one of the movies I worked on, you'll be able to buy Denzel Washington's vintage, leather peacoat he wore in the scene in Harlem from, the platform. So that's basically what we're launching. And of course, the ability to instant message your friends in different languages while you watch TV at the same time. Now, people may, argue and say, oh, they have stuff out there. Yes, they do have various different remnants of what we're bringing to the market, but no one has it all put together in a cohesive manner where it minimizes the experience of buffering while watching something and doing something else at the same time. You ever go to a website and it's like, wow, I have all these pages open and my computer's slow.
Yes.
And that's because your internet connectivity is throttling, it's choking basically, because it's sending data packets of sound and image and video to your laptop or to your phone. So if you go open up to another page, another page, another page, now it has to split the duties, right? Of sending data packets to all these different web pages or these different apps.
While you're saying that, you know why I'm giggling? I remember sending me a script a long time ago and I was like, it's taking so long. And you were
yes.
like, how many windows do you have? You taught me that.
Mm-hmm.
And so yeah. You guys, I just want to say, like, first of all, he talked about judging a book by its cover. When you see Jay, he is like t-shirt, hoodie, jeans, so laid back.
Timberland.
But he's so successful. Oh, I can't even say the word. You're so successful. And you've been so successful so, like, all your life since you were so young that I don't think people expect, I should say, for you to jump in this Rolls Royce Phantom. But he will jump in the Rolls Royce Phantom and then get on the train.
Mm-hmm.
Like, within, like, 15 minutes. You're so...
That's the beautiful thing about New York.
How do you feel about people judging the book by its cover? Like, do you feel like you get judged more by white corporate America or by Black corporate America, like by your own people?
Well, that's okay. It's a great question. I think it's even, the white corporate construct that controls various different industries judge me if I'm not wearing a suit, even if I'm coming to a golf event, I'm not wearing golf clothes or golf attire. I'm still wearing a suit, which is what my grandmother taught me because, she comes from the civil rights movement. My grandfather, he was a Garveyite, right? He believed in Marcus Garvey teachings. And he said a black man should always wear a suit, no matter where he is, especially if he's living in white America. Why? Because white Anglo-Saxon Protestant, conservative white men who are in corporate America, they identify the suit as a uniform of excellence and success in business. And because of the explosion of hip hop and the attire that hip hop artists wear and it becoming so popular, throughout the Black American community. Successful Black Americans in hip hop have made it cool to wear certain attire in corporate America, corporate meetings, let's just say. You know, Jay-Z, Russell Simmons, I know, I've been there, worked for them, I understand it. And so I had to make sure that I separated myself, especially because of the industry I was in. You know, I couldn't come in an investor pitch meeting for my tech, or like I met with Viacom, you know, with, you know, when I started Omnio, which they own Pluto TV by now, right now. But yeah, that's another story. So I knew I couldn't come to the VP over at Viacom, or meeting, you know, Sherry Redstone, who is the billionaire woman who owns Viacom, that owns BT, right? With my hat to the side, right? I had to come with my suit, and it had to be a specific suit. It couldn't be Armani. It couldn't be, you know, with wearing cologne from Givenchy. It had to be a Brooks Brothers, because when you're dealing with red, and I'm talking technology now, mind you, the other kid, he might be a white Jewish kid or a white Anglo kid that is from Palo Alto, and he has galoshes, and, you know, when he has his shorts, he can come in, because, you know, the mentality is they know, or the Asian kid, they got to know. So in order for me to be respected, like these two particular ethnic groups I just mentioned, in that particular meeting, I have to have a suit on, and I have to have a specific suit that means business to the investor, the venture capitalist, the hedge fund, even the guy who owns the family office, right? That's worth $300 billion. He has Brooks Brothers on. Okay, let me see his shoes. They're not Kenneth Cole's, right? Because the hip hop industry has Kenneth Cole's now, you know? Yeah. It has to be a specific shoe that you wear also. Now, people may argue with me, but I'm a walking experience of this stuff, you know? And there was a time, like in Hollywood, where racism was running rampant in terms of, you know, who got booked for what roles, right? That were very stereotypical of Black people. Well, it was going on in Silicon Valley. You know, I would be in pitch meetings for my technology, and my technology was very robust and very competitive. And yeah, the guy would be on his BlackBerry, and it's like, and I have a suit on, but again, it was that racism. So that's the white corporate construct, you know, of racism, racism and bigotry that I had to contend with. And then when you talk about my own kind, it's not really racism, it's prejudice, you know, because I speak a certain way. I'm an intellect. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. So I'm a white boy. Yeah, so I'm a white boy. I speak a certain way, but when they find out I'm from the hood, and I witnessed, you know, 8 murders before the age of 15, and I saw a guy get burnt alive, and I heard girls get raped in U-Haul trucks growing up, because I'm in the hood and dodging hypodermic needles. You know, riddle me that. You know, but my family unit, they understood. It took a village. So because not only my family unit, but when I stepped outside my house, my apartment building. Even the drug dealers knew that, you know, I was different. You know, there was a drug dealer that I conversed with all the time, and he had the best cocaine on the strip. But when I came on the block, you know, no, just really, you know, big shout out to Big E, you know, I still got it, right? a big shout out to E. He stopped everything, you know, and Bump, which was his girlfriend at the time, she would tell her, she would scream down the block, stop what you're doing, because Jason was, you know, I was going to NYU at the time. So I had like the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, you know, cardigan on, and they would say, you know, everybody stop what you're doing. And I would physically talk to E about comic books. And I would talk to him about, you know, PHP and JavaScript. And he was in the military, and he talked about alien spaceships he saw, and how they had to give him drugs, and then he got discharged, and he came back in the streets. So my point is, it was a village that raised me. So I had the best of so many different worlds. And for the kids that wanted out, you know, we snatched as many as we could. I'm talking about my family, you know, my grandmother, my mother, you know, if they were looking for a way out. And so as I got older, I witnessed the racism, the prejudice, just for my own kind, because of the way I spoke or the way I handled myself, until they realized that I was from the same world they were from. Oh, my father was, you know, he was what he was. He was a gangster. He put in his work, and, it, you know, but at the end of the day, I still, you know, you still get racism from whites and Asians, specifically Chinese and Indians. And you still get prejudice from your own kind. And I think that what we need to do is we need to have more discussion within our own community. And when I say community, I don't use that lightly, like, oh, I love you. Community meaning the Northeast Black community, the Dirty South Black community, because those are different Black communities. We're not all Black community, in my opinion. We have different communities culturally. Right. When I lived down in L.A. in Culver City, where the Crips were, I'm from Harlem. I'm like, that's how you talk to women out here? That's a different Black community. Yes. Really? That's how you do? Okay. And then, you know, when I came back home and I saw there was Bloods in my hood, and I was like, that's the LA thing. What are y'all doing? So just even on that level, on that lower tier level, in terms of ideological understanding and thought, I said, you know what? We have to have these discussions so that we can come together as one unified front in terms of owning our distribution. Now, I'm glad with social media. I'm glad that we have content creators who are creating various different pieces of information on how to create generational wealth. I'm not saying that they're doing it haphazardly. I'm saying that they're doing it aggressively, and I'm happy for that. But I think that there still has to be a conversation of healing within the Black family. There has to be a conversation of Black men who have not been there for their children, because their children are angry, and that's why our children are acting out, like in Chicago.
Oh, you know? Time with you is gone. Like, it is gone back, but I need you to come back, because you are my life. No. You saved my life. We didn't get a chance to talk about, like, he physically saved my life one time. we didn't get to talk about fatherhood. Mm-hmm. We didn't get to talk about that you healed me from my first heartbreak.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There's so much more that I want to talk to you about. Will you come back?
Yes. And let me preface this before we leave. You know, when you say I healed you from your heartbreak, it was nothing for the viewers. It was nothing sexual at all. People will misconstrue that. When you said I healed you from your heartbreak, right?
Yeah.
So we live in a time where everything is over-sexualized between man and woman, especially Black man and Black woman. It was not a sexual healing. It was intellectual. It was spiritual. You know, it was emotional, you know, walking through that process to get away from that heartbreak so that you can go live and be the phoenix and fly free, you know? So yes, but having a Black father, now having a Black father is imperative to Black boys and Black girls. I had my Black father, regardless of his rap sheet, he was there, and, you know, he was there, period, the end. And he taught me how to be a man, period, the end. He taught me this is what girls do and this is what boys do. This is what men do and this is what you do. You protect your mother, you protect your grandmother, you protect the women in your family. That's it. You protect the women in your village. That's it, period, the end.
And you've always protected me.
And that's why I love you.
I love you.
And that's why we are still here today.
And thank I want other Black women to have that experience of pure love from a man who's not trying to sleep with them. And mm-hmm. I don't understand why I've been so lucky to get those connections, but so many women are missing that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's because I don't want to say that you carry yourself a certain way per se, and that's the reason why, but I think it's your energy. I think it's your delivery. I think it's your transparency. I think that people can feel that you genuinely care about them and you care about other people. I think that if we don't start controlling our narrative that's controlled by another ethnic group, specifically white Anglo-Saxon Protestant corporate American investors investing in the degradation of Black women by way of paying a rap executive, all right, or paying a content provider, okay, through advertising dollars to keep promoting the misogyny, the Black male misogyny, right, the degradation of Black women, the rape culture, then we are going to keep perpetuating this indoctrination of us not interacting with each other with respect, okay? Not everything has to be a sexual connection for me to love you and protect you because you look like my sister, you look like my mother, you look like my cousin, you know? And we have to hold each other accountable at this particular point. We can't, we got to stop saying, oh, that's them, you know, well, that's their problem. That's not, I'm just living my best life. I'm not trying, you know, I'm just trying to earn my leisure. No, you know, that's why other ethnic groups are so far ahead of us, because they understand, they indoctrinated themselves to protect the entire village globally. So the conversation of us saying, oh, well, he's African and she's from the Caribbean, she's not part of our tribe, that's not the case. You know, so I'm very careful with terminology like Black community, because what is the Black community? Because there's a bunch of different Black communities. Whenever I travel within North America or within the Caribbean or within South America, specifically like Brazil. So anybody who's part of the African diaspora is part of the African construct, the African race. Period, the end. And we have to protect each other. And that's how other ethnic groups will respect us and respect our women, and not promote and support any establishments and corporations that systematically and deliberately put money behind the degradation and the genocide of our children and our women and our men. Period. We love hip hop. I've been in hip hop for 20 years, marketing, you know, marketing. I was one of the first digital strategists. I was the first techie to do social media on AOL chat rooms for Arista Records and Bad Boy and all those guys. You know, I was promoting male misogyny, rape culture, you know, and because I was part of the problem, I understood what I needed to do because I knew where I came from, but I'm part of the problem. And I had to hold my own self accountable because I'm pushing rap records, you know, bitches ain't shit but hoes and tricks, because I'm working with Death Row Records, Death Row East.
Right.
You know, and we got to say, OK, well, I need to make money. Yes. But now we're in the best time of our lives with the Internet. We can make money without selling out. We used to say sell out. Now people say sell our souls without selling out our own mothers, our own daughters, you know. If you don't like it, if you won't let your daughter listen to Sexy Red or Cardi B, right? Then tell Sexy Red's manager and tell Sexy Red, you know, there's something wrong in a comment, but then don't look at the video on YouTube so she can get mechanical royalties on Spotify.
I sure do.
You have to.
Sexy Red,
right,
is a problem for me.
Right. You know? Because that's where it's at. Once you start making these individuals understand that our voice is heard by taking the money away, because that's the only thing people respect is the money, you know, and stop with these cockamamie conversations. Oh, you know, Sexy Red is a plant. She's the op from the government. No, we are the problem. We're our own ops, because we're not taking ourselves accountable. Absolutely. For supporting that stuff. And that's the whole point about being a man. Because if you're a man, you take responsibility and you hold accountability. Make sense?
I love you. I got to go on that. Because your girl Shawan is coming on.
Okay.
I love you.
Tell her I said hi.
Yeah. Feel better.
Love you always.
Okay. Party. I love you. Thank you.
Love you more. Call me anytime. Okay. Thank you. Thank you for having me. God bless you.
Bye-bye. God bless you too. Bye, baby. Thank you.
Bye, beautiful.
Hi, it's One United Bank, the nation's largest Black-owned bank. Join our Bank Black World of Benefits when you open a Black Wall Street checking account and enroll in direct deposit. You can get paid up to 2 days early. Not only that, you can apply for Cash Please, a short-term loan. And the best part? There's no credit check. Join us at oneunited.com today.
Hi, I'm Terry Williams, president of One United Bank. We're proud to announce our new Empowerment Network with more surcharge-free ATMs than any other bank in the country. Over 100,000, including neighborhood retailers and Chase and Citibank branches. The nation's largest Black bank has the nation's largest ATM network. We keep breaking records to empower you. So join me at oneunited.com today.
One United Bank.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.